welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, October 26th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll get an update on Juno Lyric Opera activities with guests Scarlett Adam and John Clow. Maddie Nolan will be here to highlight the Juno Family Health and Birth Center's Alaskan Dinner and Cabaret Night Thursday at SALT. Kate Pressing will be here to focus on November computer classes at the Learning Connection, and we'll hear about Juno food tours, a new business in town, those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon, currently 46 degrees at the Juno Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. 8 police officers in Canada have been suspended after allegations of physical and sexual abuse against Native women. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
Quebec's Public Security Minister, Lise Thériault, says it is reprehensible for a police officer to use his power to abuse people who are vulnerable. She says the allegations first came to light in May and have been under investigation by Quebec's provincial police. But the case has now been turned over to the Montreal Police Force after criticism that the provincial force was investigating its own members. Since the allegations have been made public, more First Nations women have come forward with stories of abuse against police officers in Val-d'Or, nearly 300 miles north of Ottawa. Those that have talked say officers routinely picked up Aboriginal women who appeared to be intoxicated, drove them out of town, and forced them to walk home in the cold and the snow, sometimes without their footwear. Some say they were also physically assaulted or forced to perform sex acts. Nukusit is the executive director of the Native Women's Shelter in Montreal. She says most of the women kept quiet until now.
They're not believed. They go to the police or they go to their families, and if it's a small community and the police are the only ones that they can go to and they're the ones who are doing this behavior, where are you going to go?
Native leaders in the region say they believe more women will come forward, but they say the issue highlights another larger problem that must be addressed. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
One of 4 men seeking exoneration from murder convictions in Alaska has testified to his innocence. Marvin Roberts is the last of the Fairbanks 4 to address the court in an ongoing hearing to reconsider the 18-year-old case in light of new evidence. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Marvin Roberts, George Fries, Kevin Pease, and Eugene Vent were convicted of the October 1997 fatal beating of 15-year-old John Hartman on a downtown Fairbanks street. But the circumstantial case has long been questioned. The men, who were 20 or younger when arrested following a night of partying, have testified during this month's post-conviction relief hearing that they were scared and confused when police pinned the Hartman assault on them. Here's Roberts addressing the court.
I trusted police officers. I took what they said at full value up until they started accusing me of doing violent things.
Roberts, who unlike the others maintains he wasn't drunk, outlines a night that included driving around the city with friends, but not Fries, Pease, or Vent. And he additionally denies being at the scene of the Hartman attack, an issue state attorney Adrian Bachman pressed him on.
I'm asking you whether you walked away from your car when you were at 9th and Barnett.
I drove by 9th and Barnett.
And you didn't stop and get out of your car?
No.
Bachman and other state attorneys are defending the original jury convictions of the Fairbanks 4 and will be going on the offensive this week as state witnesses are called. I'm Dan Bross.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency has denied a request by the Navajo Nation for an emergency declaration following the Gold King Mine waste spill. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
FEMA says responsibility for the tribe's recovery falls under the authority of other federal agencies, but Navajo Nation President Russell Begay says the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's response to the spill has been insufficient. He also says the incident has devastated the tribe economically and culturally, and he'll appeal FEMA's decision. In August, EPA and contract workers released 3 million gallons of toxic waste from Colorado's Gold King mine. It flowed into the San Juan River and through the Navajo Nation. The EPA says tests show the river is safe for crops and livestock, but many farmers and ranchers have refused to use the water. A recently released Department of the Interior report blames the EPA for the spill. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by WanderingBold.com, providing American Indian crafts and supplies since 1969. Shipping nationwide, virtually everything you need to powwow is at WanderingBold.com. Holiday delivery on orders placed by December 15th. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, October 26th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host, and with me now in the studio is Maddie Nolan-Grimes. She's the executive director of the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center and also a midwife. Welcome to the show, Maddie.
Thanks so much for having me today.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. So you have a fundraiser coming up this Thursday at SALT. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so we have a great fundraiser coming up. It's Thursday at 6 at SALT, and we actually have a special menu that's being prepared for us, including halibut, and there's a chicken option, and a delicious vegetarian Wellington option as well. And then we'll actually have a host of three different singers and a pianist playing for us that night as well.
Well, that sounds like fun. Do you remember who the singers are going to be?
Yeah. So actually, I'm going to be one of the performers. So I'm going to wear an extra hat that night just for the fun of it. And then I'll be accompanied with my husband, Derek Grimes. And then Sarah Radke Brown also has a lovely set that she's putting together.
Okay.
And Tom Looker will be our accompanist for the evening as well.
That sounds like fun. And so the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center, you are a nonprofit. You're located sort of in the hospital complex, but are you related? Tell us about it.
So our birth center is actually an independent nonprofit that's run by myself and a board of directors, and we have three different midwives on staff that can provide prenatal care and birth and postpartum care. So we're completely separate from the hospital and Valley Medical, the two other places most commonly associated with birth and prenatal care.
Okay. And tell us about, let's say, the average experience for somebody at the Juneau Family Health and Birth Center. What's it look like? When do they usually come and see you the first time and take it from there?
Yeah. Usually people come and see us earlier in their pregnancy, so somewhere between 6 and 10 weeks in their pregnancy, and then they'll rotate through meeting all of our midwives during their prenatal experience. So they really have a chance to get to know all of our staff and usually feel like they've developed a pretty personal relationship with everybody, including our receptionists and anybody else that they encounter in the clinic. And then the birth experience will have two of our midwives that you've met and bonded with present at your birth. And then we actually will do home visits after the baby's born as well. So we want you to stay home and rest that first week so we come to you and do all of the stuff in your own space where you feel safe and comfortable.
I was looking at your website and I saw images of these rooms that don't really look like a traditional hospital setting. Tell us about the atmosphere.
Yeah, our atmosphere for the birth center is really set up in a way to try to be home-like. Some people even say it's a spa-like environment. So each of the birthing suites has a queen-size bed to let you and your partner be able to rest and relax in. And then we have a really large birthing tub that's in the room as well. So a lot of people really like the aspect of being able to soak in the water during labor, and some people even like to have their babies born in the water. So we really try to make it comfortable and cozy for everybody in the family.
You were telling me earlier that the national average, Alaska is much higher than the national average for births, home births, and also at a center like this. How would you explain that?
I think that Juneau is just a very eclectic town. You know, we're really lucky here of having people who are really interested in non-traditional healthcare and seeking midwives, seeking naturopaths. So our center, on average, will do between 15% and 17% of the births every year that happen in Juneau. And then there are also some home birth midwives in the community as well that will add to that number. So whereas the national average is usually closer to 1% to 2% wherever you're looking.
Okay. Let's see, what time do things get started on Thursday?
So doors will open at 6, and then festivities are going to start pretty quickly thereafter. So if you're a typical Junoite, you know, really set your clock ahead and try to be there decently on time. We'll start to have dinner around 7 and then entertainment throughout the evening. And we acknowledge it's a weeknight, so we're going to try to get everything wrapped up by 9.
Okay. A little bit more about the Juno Family and Birth Center. If somebody wants to learn more, what's the best way to do that?
We have quite a variety of options. So we're on Facebook, if you're a Facebook user. And then otherwise, we have a website, which is thejunobirthcenter.org. And then our telephone number is 586-1203, if you ever have any more questions.
And can you give us directions on how to get there? And are walk-ins welcome if people just want to come check it out?
Yeah, walk-ins are always welcome. And then we also do offer free pregnancy tests and verification of pregnancy. So if you need that for any insurance purposes, you can always come by and get that. We're kind of up in the complex by the hospital. So if you know where Valley Medical and Search are located, we're just across the street from Search and down 2 doors from Valley Medical. So we're just nestled right up there with all the other kind of health complex.
Okay. Maddie Nolan-Grimes, she's the ED and also a midwife at the Juno Family Health and Birth Center. They have a fundraiser this Thursday night at SALT with a very special menu and cabaret as well. It sounds like fun. Remind me what time people should get there again.
Let's get there at 6, everybody.
Maddie, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I just wanted to mention we have a couple other options that are available for the community at the Birth Center. If you're not a pregnant mom, we have a couple yoga classes that happen, and then we have a community lending library full of books on pregnancy and birth, but also just nutrition, lifestyle, and then parenting all the way through your whole kind of parenting journey. So if you have any needs for those resources, they're available to the community regardless of where you are.
And I guess one more question. I know a lot of nonprofits are looking for help, of course, financially, but also from volunteers. Are volunteers welcome or needed in your organization?
Volunteers are always welcome. We always have kind of little tasks that if we have a one-time volunteer, that's great. If you have a couple hours a week that you would be willing to commit for a couple months, we would love that as well. So the best way to get a hold of us for those opportunities would be to call the main number, the 586-1203 number.
All right, Maddie. Thanks again for your time.
Awesome. Thank you.
Baby, baby, I miss you so very much, it hurts me. Baby, I gotta have my baby back. Can't sleep, can't eat, because I've lost my sweet baby sweet. I gotta have my baby back. Alone in a tavern, people all around, laughing and dancing, painting the town. Jukebox playing songs about you, songs with memories making me blue. Oh, baby, come on home. Without my baby, I just can't go on. I gotta have my baby back.
People all around, laughing and dancing, painting the town.
jukebox is playing songs about you, songs with memories making me blue. Oh, baby, come on home. Without my baby, I just can't get along. I gotta have my baby back.
I'm John Sievertson, host of Cross Currents on Monday morning at 8 a.m. I listen to KRNN because it's fun, fresh, and non-commercial. Fun because, well, that's obvious. Fresh because it's new, unscripted, and non-commercial because it's public radio. Please join us.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, October 26, 2015. It's about 16 minutes after the hour.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 26th of October, 2015. It's the birthday of the playwright John Arden, born in Barnsley, England, 1930, best known for his play Sergeant Musgrave's Dance. It's the birthday of Hillary Rodham Clinton, born in Chicago, 1947, the daughter of a man who sold draperies and was so frugal that even on the coldest winter nights in Illinois, he would turn the heat in the house off and then wake up early in the morning to warm the house back up before everyone else arose. It was a middle-class suburb, Chicago. The girl played sports. She wrote for the student newspaper, participated in student government. Her father was a Republican. She was, too, campaigned for Barry Goldwater in the 1964 presidential election. First year in college, she was president of the Wellesley Young Republican Student Group. But influenced by the civil rights movement, the war in Vietnam, she changed her views, and as a junior in college, she campaigned for Eugene McCarthy on an anti-war platform. It was on this day, 1900, Henry James wrote his first letter to the young novelist Edith Wharton, beginning a long friendship. Wharton was an admirer of James's work. She sent him one of the first short stories she ever wrote. He wrote back to say that he liked the story, but she shouldn't write about Europe if she didn't live there. He said, "Be tethered in native pastures, even if it reduces you to a backyard in New York." So she was inspired to write about New York, and the result was her first big novel, The House of Mirth, in 1905. They remained friends for the rest of Henry James's life, even as Edith Wharton became more and more successful and Henry James's novels sold less and less well. It's the birthday of the Russian novelist and poet Andrei Bely, which was the pen name of Boris Nikolaevich Bagayev. Born Moscow, 1880, best known for his 1913 novel Petersburg, a book of which Nabokov said, "My greatest masterpieces of 20th century prose are Joyce's Ulysses, Kafka's Transformations, Bailey's Petersburg, a story of conspiracy and betrayal during the 1905 Russian Revolution." Here's a poem for today by Paul Hastovsky entitled Gauguin's Grandson. Was named Paul Gauguin, too. He was an artist, too. He lived in Denmark in his grandfather's shadow all his life, and he chafed against that shadow like living under a rock as big as the biggest island in French Polynesia. He painted only insects, insects that live under rocks, beetles, ants, centipedes, pill bugs. In a later period, he painted only his wife, Marta, in only her long black hair and horn-rimmed glasses. Toward the end of his life, he made hundreds of collages of orthopterous insects, katydids, mantids, cicadas, crickets, and grasshoppers with long hind legs for jumping, or you could say flying, and for making a rasping, chafing sound, or you could say song. Gauguin's grandson, a poem by Paul Hostovsky from The Bad Guys, published by Future Cycle Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by TIAA CREF, a global financial company dedicated to delivering financial outcomes that matter. TIAA CREF, created to serve, built to perform. Learn more at TIAA.org. And by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem solving through online games, Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles with Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, October 26, 2015. It's about 21 minutes after the hour. We have a few extra minutes here on the show today. A couple weeks ago, I had the privilege of hanging out with George Grass, longtime teacher and guitar maker now here in Juno. And I made a video profile. And here's the audio from that profile. If you like it, you can go to our website at ktoo.org and watch the video itself.
I'm George Grass here in Juno. And I identify myself mostly now as a guitar maker. The one behind you there is the 21st build that I've done. So I've got guitars in Philadelphia, Petersburg, Bremerton, a couple up in, one in Fairbanks, two in Anchorage. I think they're accepted well. Everybody knows that they're not perfect, but a lot of people, I think, like the idea of an Alaskan guitar maker using Alaskan woods. And if they play well, that's worth it, I think. Once I get started on a project, I get so excited about it. I just want to get it done, and that doesn't work with guitar making. You really have to slow down, or else you're just going to be making firewood. Conquer the challenge or learn something new that I like, then I think it's worth it. Here in the wood shop, this is yellow cedar from Huna, and I'm able to get that in plentiful supply. These are dried and ready to go. This is the issue that luthiers and guitar makers deal with all the time, is how do you get a good supply of wood that's local, because I want this to be mostly Alaskan woods. So this is red cedar, this is hemlock, and this is spruce. And all of these came from trees that were salvaged when they cut the new highway up above Ock Rec, just west of town here out in Juneau. So these are going to be some really nice planks to work with, but because of the nature of wood, even though these have been cut for 4 or 5 years, they still need a couple of years to dry right here in the shop, and not too hot, not too cold. And then they'll be ready to make guitars out of. This is a yellow cedar guitar of my own design. I can't decide if it's a really shapely woman or a leaf, but it's a very nice design. As I said, a yellow cedar. I just made the neck pocket last night, and I'm really proud of the neck pocket. This is one of the most technical parts for me of guitar making. And what you want is a good, nice neck pocket that will almost hold the guitar. Let's see if it will. Yeah, look at that. Good, tight. So it's going to, it'll be bolted together later. But that's a good joint. It's going to make a good connection for the sound of the guitar. So this is going to take a lot of work. This is a ready-made neck, but I'm still going to have to do what they call shimming to make sure that the neck allows the strings to go through the bridge. still have to drill the holes for the tuners. I still have to design and shave down a nut for it. All the frets will have to be leveled and polished. And then I'll probably do abalone or pearl inlay on this neck. I'd like to build a guitar a month. I think I can do that. Yeah. And if I continue to expand, I'll be trying some things that I haven't. The next thing I want to try is binding. A lot of guitars have a binding around the edge, and that takes special tools. I'm going to try that next. Somewhere out in the distance is acoustic guitars. And of course, as a guitar maker using Alaskan woods, that'll mean that I need to do some milling, I need to do some thinning, I need to know how to get it down to the right gauge for acoustic guitars. I think that's the joy of it, is trying something new all the time. This is getting pretty nice. I think I'm liking what I'm seeing here.
If you want to see George in person, you can go to ktoo.org and just search for George Gress Guitar Maker. That was a fun piece to make, and you can see images there of the guitars that he's making that are getting national and international attention. Switching gears, but not too much, over to Juno Lyric Opera now. With me in the studio is Frances Leach. She's the executive director of Juno Lyric Opera, and Scarlett Adams. She is the vice president of the board. Welcome to the show, you two.
Hi, thank you. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for coming in out of this beautiful afternoon.
Oh, yes.
It's hard to be inside a little bit, huh?
It's pretty awesome.
So you have some fun stuff coming up with the Juno Lyric Opera. You want to tell us about it, Frances?
Absolutely. Well, as many of you know, this is our 40th anniversary, and the board crazily agreed to do a production a month. So we are in the thick of it, and this month we are doing something a little out of our realm. We are putting on a Halloween ball, and it's not like our normal productions of musicals and operas. This is an actual Halloween ball, complete with amazing, spectacular decorations. Kari and the Wrist Rockets are going to be our live band throughout the evening. And we're having a costume competition with amazing prizes from Eagle Crest, Nugget Alaska Outfitter Rejuvenation, Canton House, Mabel McKinley, Winkles.
Busting Out Boutique.
Yep. I mean, so you're going to want to come and wear a costume for sure so you can win some of these awesome prizes. We also are going to have a live tarot card reader there so people can get their tarot cards read. And we're going to be having Rockwell deliver amazing special Halloween beverages such as
adult beverages.
Yes, such as Jello shots served in an actual syringe. And brain drinks with floating brains. So this is an over 21 event, I must add. And $15 gets you in the door and gets you access to all of those exciting opportunities. And you will also be given a wristband, which means if you want to come check it out and then go check something else out and then come back, as long as you're wearing your wristband that we gave you, we'll let you back
in. But you won't want to leave because Halloween is always wet and cold. And why do you want to go outside when you have it all right there?
Exactly.
So this is a fundraiser, right, for the Juno Lyric Opera. Tell us about what this is,
This is about celebrating, actually. Scarlett pitched this idea to me when we were trying to think of our production a month. We're like, what are we going to do in October? And Scarlett came up with this idea, you know, we should celebrate, we should party. This is 40th anniversary. And it was just inevitable that, you know, she's like, let's do a Halloween-themed party. And it kind of just went into that. And where we would love to have it be a fundraiser and make money, we're also just really wanting to have a good time and give Juno a good time.
It's just an excuse to have a party.
Yep.
What, do you have your costumes figured out yet?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Ask
I'm
her.
I'm sad I can't be in the competition. But I'm going to be a peacock.
Wow.
Yes, I will be strutting my tail feathers. Can I say that?
Yeah, you just did.
I did.
So there you have it, folks. Don't miss Franny's tail feathers.
That's right. Goodness gracious.
Yes, it's Halloween. I know. I've put in more thought on this stupid costume for myself than I have, like, at work or JLO or anything else. I mean, it's Halloween and it's a Saturday night. That's awesome.
Mainly, we've been making a lot of decorations. You're going to walk into a haunted forest graveyard. So it's going to be pretty exciting to see what we can do at the Jack.
You know what the best part, though, is? The best part is not the dancing or the fun drinks or the costumes. I'm most excited. Alaska Fudge Company is doing caramel apples for us, and they're doing popcorn balls. So I'm like, I'll be sitting in the corner, sticky, and crabbing my face. Nice.
Well, this is going to be fun. This is at the Jack on the 31st. What time should people get there?
Doors open at 8 o'clock and close at 1 a.m.
Fun.
So yeah. There's going to be great music throughout the evening, and... yeah, come get your tarot cards read. I mean, how many times? And we're not even charging for that.
No.
It's a suggested donation. So you can get your tarot card read for free with a suggested donation.
Madam Katrina.
And then the next month,
leads
right into Film Fest, right?
It does.
Yep.
Juno Lyric Opera teamed up with the Goldtown Nickelodeon, and we're going to be doing a Film Fest every Sunday at 2 o'clock and every Tuesday at 7 o'clock. We will be showing a Broadway musical or an opera. The first one that we're going to be showing is Aida,
mm-hmm.
and that'll be Sunday and Tuesday, the first week. And the second week, we're showing Rent, the Broadway musical.
Such a good one.
It's
great
amazing.
Music. Oh, that's great.
Yep. The third one is an opera, The Flying Dutchman. And
mm-hmm.
the fourth one and the final one is one people are very excited about, and that is a Sound of Music sing-along. And Colette Costa has told me that the only way that we can get Sound of Music is on the old 35 millimeter, which, of course, they've retired at the Goldtown, but they still have it, so they're bringing it back.
Wow.
How special
so
is that?
It's going to be a very exciting thing for not only Sound of Music lovers, but also people who really enjoy watching shows on 35 millimeter.
And it sounds like they'll be invited to sing.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And dress up.
And get looked at funny.
Yeah.
No.
No, I mean, we're encouraging it to dress up and have a good time. And you can buy tickets for any of these shows on our website at www.junoopera.org, or you can go down to the Jack or Hearthside Books or Rainy Retreat. So I know the Sound of Music one's going to sell out fast. So if you're interested in that, you better do that.
Fun times. And then Amal and the Night listeners in December?
Amal and the Night visitors, yep, opens in December. We're going to have a pay-as-you-can on December 10th, and then the show actually opens on the 11th and runs the 12th, the 13th, the 18th, 19th, and 20th at McFeeters Hall. It's a lovely little opera. It was first run in 1951, Giancarlo Menotti, and it's one act. It was designed specifically for children, so this is a family opera, and it's really a lovely story. This is one you definitely want to bring your kids to. And before the opera opens for Amal and the Night Visitors, there'll be a pre-show of the Benjamin Britten Ceremony of Carols. So it's a really wonderful evening.
And one thing about Amal and the Night Visitors, you know, Scarlett, so you can bring your children. Don't be afraid that you're going to have your child sitting through, you know, a two-hour-long opera. This is a very short opera.
It's 45
minutes.
45
minutes.
45 minutes.
So it's a great opportunity to introduce your children to something.
And it's English.
Like this.
It's in English. So
yeah.
No super titles, no funny languages. It's in English. So definitely come on out.
You are both singers, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
What is it about opera that you love so much?
Well,
that's a funny question to ask me, because before I took this job, back in 2008,
yeah.
I've been here a while,
yeah.
kind of coming and going, I'd only really sang some opera arias in my voice lessons. I've never actually been in a true opera. So for me, Juno Lyric Opera is we're not just opera. We're a lot of other things. So I love it that, you know, it's not just for people who are into opera. There's people like me involved who like to participate in the choral workshops or the musicals that we produce. Who's Your Diva? That has nothing to do with opera.
Right.
There's so much out there, and not only for the non-opera lovers, but also for people who have varying degrees of singing talents. You know, we have beginners that come in and have never sang ever except inside a shower. Mm-hmm. you know, one hot mess performed at Who's Your Diva. She had never performed publicly before. And, you know, I like it for that. I really like that it, you know, it doesn't discriminate against voice levels or genre.
Sounds very accessible.
It started out as, you know, originally true opera, but over the years it has developed to include the Broadway shows, the operettas. We've done Gilbert and Sullivan, and there's something for everybody. So even though it says opera and people immediately think, oh, I hate opera, it's surprising. There's a lot of good stuff out there, and it's Juno Lyric Opera is here for everyone in Juno, so yeah.
And Kari and the Wrist Rockets, you know, playing at our Halloween ball, definitely not opera.
Not opera.
You know, it's we're just big music supporters.
Yeah.
And that's really what I love about that this organization.
Exactly. Sounds like fun. And the next time they can see you in person, it sounds like, is at the Halloween ball at the Jack.
Absolutely. Yep. We hope to see you there.
And the Film Fest, and them all, and the Night Visitors. Tell us again where we can find you on social media.
Yep, we're on Facebook under Juno Lyric Opera, and we also have a web page which outlines everything, and that's www.junoopera.org. You can also wander into the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, JAC, and purchase tickets there, or Hearthside, or Rainy Retreat.
All right, Frances Leach, she's the Executive Director of the Juno Lyric Opera, and Scarlett Adams, she's the Vice President of the Board. Thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, thanks, Scott.
Enjoy
your
sunny
day, Juno.
All right.
Friday, October 30th from 6:45 p.m. until 8:15, the Treadwell Ice Arena will be hosting the 13th annual Halloween Skate. Come dressed up, CD Arena transformed into a Halloween extravaganza, and watch the skaters in their scariest costumes. More information online at juno.org/parkrec/ice rink. This message is brought to you by the Treadwell Ice Arena.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon on Monday, October 26, 2015. It's about 20 minutes until the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host. With me now in the studio is Kate Pressing. She's a program manager over at CIRC and the Learning Connection. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thanks, Scott.
And I didn't get your full title. Will you tell me the rest of your job title?
Oh, well, I'm part of the Learning Connection crew, and I'm a program manager. So I manage a variety of programs, including a youth employment program called JobX, our free computer classes that we have going on there, and I also help out with our Juno Construction Academy.
Okay. And for folks that don't know, remind us where you're located.
Okay, so we're located right downtown across from the Marine View apartment buildings or Marine Park down there at 210 Ferry Way on the corner.
And what is the average person like that comes to see you? What are they looking for?
Ooh, I don't know if we could really say that there's an average person that comes in. We really serve a variety of needs for people that are looking to improve their opportunities, and it's all over the board. But we do serve adults. I guess I can say that much. Pretty much from, 16 on up is where we serve, although we do have a after-school homework program out at Green Park that serves young kids. But other than that, we are serving adults in the community that are trying to improve their opportunities. Some of the different things that we have, we do GED preparation and GED testing, but sometimes people think that that's what we are, the GED center, and we are really a lot more than that. So an example would be that we also just do general adult basic education. We have classes that are going on for math, so we have two different levels of math classes that we offer right now in the morning, one at 10 o'clock and one at 11 o'clock. And then we offer an English and writing class in the afternoon. And those are open to anybody that is interested in improving their skills in that area. We do have them take an assessment before they start the class, so we kind of know where they're at to begin with. But so some people are taking that to improve their skills, to take our GED test, to get their high school equivalency. But we also have a lot of people that are taking it to, because they're planning on going to the university, for example, and they want to prepare before they go out there and take their placement tests out there. So they're trying to prepare, be better prepared for that, for either our university here at UAS or for some other one. We also have people that are taking those classes to prepare to go, like, for example, to AvTech up in Seward, different things like that. So.
And are there costs for these classes?
There is no cost. That, well, we do receive a grant for that, and so those classes are available at no cost.
And if someone's interested in taking one of these courses, you say sometimes there is an assessment that they'll take. What else is intake like?
Well, every Friday we have an intake for GED, and so somebody can learn what the whole GED process is on Friday mornings at 9 o'clock. But for somebody that's coming in and they're interested in taking the classes because they want to improve their skills for other reasons, we'd probably just kind of discuss with them what their goals are and set up a time for them to come and take the assessment and then go from there and have them start taking classes.
What are the hours like?
So we're open Monday through Friday, and Monday through Thursday we're open from 9 to noon, and then again from 1 o'clock to 4:30. Fridays we're just open till noon, 9 to noon. However, we do also offer another one of our real popular programs is our free computer classes. So we're open in the evening two nights a week for computer classes as well. So the rest of the center isn't open, just our computer lab during that time. And we've got some new classes starting up in November.
All right. What are some of the computer classes that you do have?
Well, we offer our classes September through May throughout the year, and we typically offer them on a month-long cycle for a schedule. So for November, we've got our new schedule out, and so an example of what we're offering in November is we have a class called Living in a Digital World. So what you're doing there is learning to use the tools for cloud-based computing and social networking. So it's just introducing people to, you know, how do you live online? And so examples of things that you would get covered in that class is like learning how to use Google, like the Google Calendar or Google Drive, So, for example, we also teach classes in Microsoft Office at other times. We don't have those this month, but like where you might use Microsoft Word to create a document, if you're using Microsoft Office in Google, you might be using the Drive documents. And so instead you can do it all online. And so for people that don't have access to some of the other programs, this could be really important. And just knowing how it's used. Kids are all using it at school right now. Teachers are having them do that. And so if you're an adult and you want to know what your kids are doing.
Okay. We were talking earlier about volunteers. Do you have a need for those?
We do, yes. So some of the other programs that we have English as a second language classes. So we have scheduled classes, but we also have volunteers that work with those ESL students. And so we are always looking for volunteers to work with ESL students. We look for volunteers to work with people that are trying to improve their basic skills math, basic skills reading and writing, those kinds of things. And so we have a volunteer coordinator, Patty, and she would have you fill out a volunteer application, find out a little bit more about what you're interested in volunteering and what kind of schedule you could commit to, those kinds of things. We do background checks. Okay.
What's the best contact info for y'all down there?
So we have phone number. So our phone number is 586-5718. You can stop by or you can go to our website, which is circ.org/TLC. We have our full calendar on that website that shows all the classes and stuff that we have going on. And again, that's at circ.org/TLC, and then just click on the calendar and it would show the whole calendar of computer classes. And then we have, you know, all the programs are in on that website and little descriptions and how you get a hold of us.
Sounds good. Kate, you've been doing this for a while. You're telling me you love working down there. What is it about the atmosphere that you like?
Oh, I really like working with our clients. It's, you know, I just see people that are really trying to, you know, in some way learn something new, better their opportunities for employment, better their opportunities in life, make some changes. And so we see that coming in every day. I think we have an incredible staff. We're a very welcoming environment. I work with the youth program, the JobX program, where I work with individuals between the ages of 16 and 24. I love working with that age group. I really like seeing them, helping them getting launched into, you know, kind of the next steps for themselves.
Okay. You can meet Kate down at the Learning Connection or CIRC. It's down across from Marine Park, right down there. If you're on the bus, you could get off at Main Street, I guess, and walk right over by by City Hall, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One more thing. Can I mention one more thing?
Please do.
We have a second. We're going to be recruiting here soon for the Juno Construction Academy in November. And so we're going to have some classes that start in December and then also ones that are in January. So anybody that's interested in kind of learning about construction and getting involved in a construction-related career, you should come and be talking to us in November.
All right, Kate Pressing, she's a program manager at the Learning Connection at CIRC. Give us the phone number once more.
The phone number there is 586-5718.
All right, thank you. Anything else you want to add?
I think I got it. Computer classes start next week. We got just a whole host of stuff. Call us for more information.
All right, thanks, Kate.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
This is Bird Note. Around this date in 1861, Henry David Thoreau wrote, "Our little mountain ash is all alive with birds. A dozen robins on it at once, busily reaching after and plucking the berries, actually make the whole tree shake. A robin will swallow half a dozen berries, at least in rapid succession, before it goes off, and apparently it soon comes back for more." In fall, large numbers of American robins and sleek, handsome cedar waxwings consume fruits and berries. They can strip a pyracantha bush of its fruit, consume holly berries, and peck away at apples. By consuming these fruits, they also contribute to the dispersal of the plants, voiding the seeds as they move about the countryside. Some berry-eating birds may become intoxicated with ripened fruits that contain alcohol. When they do, they may flounder on the ground or even collide with windows. If you, like Thoreau, enjoy watching birds eat berries, then consider planting trees and shrubs that produce berries to attract such birds to your garden. You'll find information on our website about native plants that are favored by birds in your area. Plant them now, and the birds will begin coming next year, and the next. They don't forget. Thanks for listening. I'm Michael Stein. You'll find us at birdnote.org.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon on Monday, October 26, 2015. Scott Burton, your host, is about 10 minutes until the top of the hour. I've been joined in the studio now by Kelly Moore, a.k.a. Midgey, a columnist and owner of Juno Food Tours. Welcome to the show, Midgey.
Thank you. It's really exciting to be here.
Yeah, so Juno Food Tours. What was the inspiration for your company?
Well, as a lot of people in Juneau know, I've been writing for the Capital City Weekly, my food column, Meals with Midgey, for about 5 years. And I also, in my daytime job, I worked for the Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau, managing the visitor centers and the volunteers. So I took all of my knowledge and information that I gathered at that job and combined it with my passion for food, particularly Juneau's food, and created a culinary walking tour of the downtown Juneau area.
Okay. Well, what's it look like?
Well, it's a lot of fun, I think. I love doing them. But what it is, a culinary walking tour is actually a historical tour that feeds you as well as gives you information about that city. So you learn about that community through its food. For example, we start at Alaska Commercial Fishermen's Memorial, which most food tours start at their tasting location. But I like to start there because I think it would be wrong to not recognize the men and women who give us this wonderful seafood that the folks will be eating on the tour, as well as what we eat here locally. And so I highlight the fact that everything is Alaskan, is wild Alaskan. There are no fish farms or anything like that. And we talk about the five species of salmon and things like that. And then from there, we go to our tasting locations. And we have points of interest along the way that highlight the beautiful and very colorful history of Juneau.
And how do you choose which restaurants to go to?
I was very fortunate. Because I have been involved in the food scene here for so long, when I went to my partners, my food partners, and I said, hey, I have this crazy idea I'm thinking of doing, the first thing every one of them said is, Midgey, how can we help you succeed? And that just really speaks to Juneau in general and the culture that we have here of everybody helping everybody succeed. And I chose the places where locals go. So I tell visitors when they come on the tour is that, if you'll pardon the term, it's not a touristy tour. I'm going to take you where I go, where my husband and I go, where my family goes, where my friends and I go have a beer, where we hang out, where we eat. And I tell them why is because they want to see, most visitors who go on a culinary tour want to see the inside track of the community, and they don't necessarily want to see what everybody else is seeing. They want to see that cool, thing that maybe they'll only get on a food tour.
And you mentioned tourists, but you also have winter tours for locals.
I do. In my summer tour, I very often have locals. It's a great tour for visiting friends and family. Had quite a few locals last year. And during the summer, I do offer the local discount. But for the winter, I wanted to do something a little bit different. Walking around downtown is a little chilly. So I am doing a progressive dinner, and it's a based on a Prohibition-era theme, kind of the Great Gatsby thing. Each location, there are three locations, and each location will have a tasting as well as a wine or cocktail pairing. So our first stop will be V Cellar Door, where we're going to kind of a speakeasy thing, where she's going to provide fondue and then a flight of her shrubs. And then our entree will be at Salts, where we're going to do mini fillets, as well as a beautiful wine pairing. And then we'll wrap up the evening at the Baranoff with a dessert and a cocktail pairing. The whole thing will be about 2.5 to 3 hours. It is also a guided tour, so there's lots of great information about the colorful history of Alaska and the United States during the Prohibition era.
Okay. Some of the restaurants you just mentioned, it seems like we're having a bit of a renaissance in food here in Juneau. Does it seem like that to you, too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is one of the things, being a food writer, makes me very excited to live here. I am on a mission to tell the world that Juneau is a dining destination. We have some of the most incredible and unique places to eat here. And the best thing is, it's all local. So I travel a lot for my company and also for pleasure. And recently I was just in Chicago and I was talking to a gentleman who owns food tours in Europe, and he couldn't wait to come to Juneau because he couldn't believe that we have the quality of food that we have here, and that from Seattle it's so easy to get here and inexpensive. So I have a feeling we're going to be getting a lot more foodies up here, I hope. And I really work hard to share the love and spread the word about our food industry here because it's phenomenal. Between the guys, you know, Chef Bo and Chef Nell, V Cellar Door, you know, all these different different restaurants that we have here. Pucker Wilson's. I mean, there's so many just great little places. Gonzo's in the Valley. I mean, I could go on and on with the wonderful food that our city offers. Is that it would be, you'd be hard pressed to eat at the same place every day for a week if you wanted to really try something new.
If somebody wants to get a hold of you or take a tour, Midgie, how should they do that?
Oh, it's very easy to reach me. You can get me through my email at info@junofoodtours.com, or you can always call me on my cell, which is 907-723-8478.
And is there a date for your next tour, or do you just sort of wait and arrange it with the folks?
How's no, that work? It's actually going to be scheduled. I just put the finishing touches on the tasting locations this morning. So the winter tour will start December 17th, and it will run through the first part of April. And I will have it up online for booking probably by the end of mid-November. And then the other thing, too, is that there will be options for booking additional things, like if it's a special occasion and you want to have some flowers in the with you, or you want to get a car or something like that. I will have all these other things because we can include transportation as well.
All right, Midgie. Well, thank you so much. She's the owner of Juno Food Tours. Give us that contact once more.
Info@junofoodtours.com, or my cell is 907-723-8478.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Get out there and eat. Get downtown, man. We've got some great food down here, and it's just waiting for you to come enjoy it.
All right, Midgie, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today. Tomorrow I'll be your host again, and we'll talk with Peter Metcalf about the upcoming Klan Conference. Kelly Manning and Melanie Adams will give us an update on Halloween activities at the Canvas. We'll get the details about November painting lessons at Sketch, and we'll talk with Thunder Mountain High School digital arts teacher Jana Lelchuk about an upcoming photography contest for students. Those interviews, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more live at 3 on KTOO and repeated at 4 on KRNN. And tune in tonight at 7 p.m. right here on KTOO for a special program highlighting Perseverance Theater's upcoming production of Sweeney Todd. Again, that's 7 p.m. tonight here on KTOO News. Let's take a look at the weather here. It's currently 46 here in Juneau, 47 in Hoonah, 46 in Gustavus. And the forecast for tonight calls for mostly clear, patchy fog late. On Tuesday, partly cloudy, patchy fog in the morning, highs around 45. Wednesday, cloudy, chance of rain. Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same frequency.